Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, that's right. We have such an important show for you today. And I'll tell you what, typically what happens is we have an intro. So, we'll...
Blog Talk Radio.
This is APSATS Radio, Health for Partners After Sexual Betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are APSATS certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Yeah, it is so important to create a safe environment. You've heard me say it many, many times before. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and Stephanie really did need to hear the truth, and the best way to get the truth is to go to a specialist who absolutely knows how to do formal disclosures, and those disclosures need to be therapeutic. You know, we've heard some horror stories about people who have done disclosures on their lunch hour in 50 minutes or less, the addict wasn't prepared. If there's a polygraph being used, he wasn't forewarned about that earlier. You know, they sprung it on him. I mean, partners and addicts alike, when they make the decision that they're going to talk about the entirety of the sexual addiction, they both need to know what the structure is going to be like. And so we at APSATS believe that there is a certain structure, and not every APSATS clinician or coach can do disclosures or wants to, but personally feel that it is such an integral part of the healing process that she can't heal until she knows the truth. And she can't know what to do in the relationship until she knows the truth. And that's why we're real advocates of disclosures and having them done a certain way where she has every question answered and he knows ahead of time what she needs so he can prepare a thorough document and give her the facts to the best of his ability. Well, I'm just checking in with you because what I know to be true is that if you're listening to this show, you've been through a lot and you are very, very strong. And I can't emphasize that enough. Now, I really want to encourage you to think about your story, how it's played out, what was difficult about that story, and who was there to support you through it, because you deserve to be supported.
And by support, I mean you deserve to have people who can hear you, validate your feelings, and be non-judgmental and allow you to actually be able to make decisions based on what you feel is in your best interest. You know, when I work with people, other clinicians, and I'm talking about this field, the first thing they say is, well, you help them get out of the relationship, don't you? And I say, no, I let them decide where they want to be. You know, some women stay in the relationship because of the kids. Some women stay in the relationship because of the financial situation that they're in. Some women are so traumatized, they stay in the relationship because they don't want to have to make any major decisions. And then some women decide, yes, I do want to leave. Some women decide, he's got a sickness, I want to see if he can get healthy. Some women make that decision and find out that he isn't working hard enough on getting healthy. So I am there for the partner to empower her to decide what's in her best interest. And that's how we've been trained at APSAP. We believe that it is her decision. She can make it for whatever reason she wants, and she can change it at any time. Nothing is written in stone. Does that make sense? Oh, gosh, I hope so, because I really want you to know that if you're a partner listening to this show, you have to have some safe people that you can talk to about this, whether it be a clinician, a coach, a pastor's wife, a support group, your sister, your mother. You get to decide. And I have met some women that didn't have anybody. They chose not to have anybody. And although there is a certain comfort in not having to deal with anybody else's reaction, what we know is that it's really important to have that support, because this is something that it can be so traumatic that we want you to not carry it alone. And I don't know about you, but I'm a big believer in hearing other people's stories. You know, that's why I did the online course, Post-Traumatic Growth. I want women to see that there have been many a woman who's gotten through to the other side and is stronger because of it, and has created purpose and passion in their life. So many of the APSATS clinicians and coaches are actually partners. You know, they figured out a way to get over on the other side, and they want to help people now. And who better to help a partner but a former partner? And yet they're no longer defined by partner betrayal. They're defined by wanting to help a woman heal. Now, I know I keep talking women, and there are lots of male partners, more and more and more. You know, with the internet being so affordable, so accessible, and so anonymous, there are women who get lost in the internet and find themselves doing things they never would have done. So we know there are women addicts out there. And I've worked with quite a few men who are very angry that there isn't more support for them. And so there are more and more support groups springing up that are just male-based. You know, there's lots of different groups. And I'm talking right now partner betrayal groups. And that's different than support groups like Essanon, Sex Addicts Anonymous, or COSA, or church groups, Women of the Battle. And they all have a different function. And so I would encourage you, being part of a group may be exactly what you need if you don't have many people to talk to. Now, the good news is it gives you more people to talk to. The tough news is that you may see people in a variety of situations in terms of their own development. And so I'm always wanting you to focus on two things. One, your own intentional self-care. What are you doing for you? How are you making that work? And then two, I really want you to identify what your strengths are so that you can work from those strengths, right? And you all have strengths. There is no doubt about it. Getting through this means you've got lots and lots of strengths. So you've heard me say before, one of the things that I do is I ask women to identify their strengths. Their positive attributes were probably there before the betrayal, or they may be more pronounced because of the betrayal. Strengths like persistence, determination, spirituality, generosity. You get to decide the words that absolutely help to define who you are. You know, when you can't think of any more words, my assignment is typically to ask clients to come up with 50 words. Then I say, well, ask your sister. Ask your best friend. My best friend's word for me, which I'm not bragging, she's very loyal, and that's a good word in and of itself, is, believe it or not, her word for me is brilliant. And I love that word. Who wouldn't want to be called brilliant? Now, I know you may be humble, and if somebody called you brilliant, you would say, oh, that's not me. I'm not brilliant. But we all do have brilliance. And that's why my favorite saying on my wall, I'm going to read it to you right now, came from Marianne Williamson. And I give this to clients too. And it says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Now, I don't know if that speaks to you, but sometimes if a woman has low self-esteem, she does not feel like she deserves to bask in her lightness, her shine. So the rest of the thing goes, we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God, and playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure about you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that was within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates us. I loved that saying so much that I paid to have somebody do calligraphy and create one that was, I don't know, about 16 by 20, maybe. That might be a little wide, but I don't know why, because I could have had it computerized and blown up, but I actually had somebody hand do it. And I have it in each one of my offices. I shrunk it down, and for my 50th birthday party, I rolled it up and tied a little ribbon around it and gave it to all my guests as they left. I've got them in both of my offices. I give it to my clients at the time. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask my webmaster if she will put it on my homepage of my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. And I'm going to offer it to you free of charge. You just have to click on it and give me your email address, and I will have it sent directly to you via email, that is. Because I don't know about you, but I love that. I love being reminded that, you know, we are born to manifest all the gifts of God, and that there's nothing enlightened about shrinking. I mean, we want to be humble, but we also want to know what our strengths are. And if you're bored this weekend, what I want you to do is I want you to write down 50 things that you like about yourself and keep it somewhere close so that you, too, can love who you are. Now, today, I got to tell you, we've got a wonderful guest. She is such an amazing person to APSAS. She's always working hard on developing retreats and workshops that benefit partners. And she really, she made it her own and has been a front runner, if you will, at getting information out to partners. And so I am really excited. She's going to tell you a little bit about her story. And what I love the most is that she is somebody who is very, very humble and is always thanking other people when ultimately she does an incredible job at organizing such good work. So, Julie, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, and I want to hear your story today. We got to talk.
Thank you so much. How are you, Carol? It's really nice. Thank you. I'm so glad to be on your show today.
Well, you've got so many tools that you offer partners, and you know, you're putting together that virtual conference, and so first of all, tell people a little bit about New England Coaching Services and a little bit about how you came to be.
Well, I'm a partner myself, and I started New England Coaching Services last year. My husband and I had a lot of really hard years, and behind the hard years was addiction and trauma. And so we were looking for help in this area and found very few resources, very few people to help us with our marriage, to understand trauma, and to help with the addiction issues. And so when we came out the other side, I just realized that there is such a huge need, and that for people that make it to the point where both the spouse and the partner are willing to get help, then there's the challenge of even finding qualified, good, safe help. So that's why I started New England Coaching Services, with the hope that we could bring the help here to New England.
Well, and, you know, it had to be even a difficult decision for you to decide, would you come out and say that you are a partner? And, you know, I know that you describe yourself as a woman who got a lot of positive information and affirmation from Marsha Means. I mean, truly, she and Barbara Steffens wrote one of the best books, I think, that a partner can read, Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, and they have such gifts to give. Was it difficult for you to decide, okay, I'm going to work on my coaching, and I'm going to help partners, and I'm going to tell people that I'm a recovered partner, if you will, a partner that is on the other side of the tracks and doing well?
Yeah, it really was. I remember the day that I decided I was going to start putting it even on Facebook, and I asked a lot of my friends to pray for me. And it's hard because you get some people who are just curious, and they're not necessarily safe people that you would tell all your information to. And at the same time, I recognize that being someone who has been wounded and is healing, it's important to know that the people helping you truly understand what you're going through. And if someone doesn't step out, then it stays that secret, shameful thing. And so I would rather be rich in knowing that I'm helping others than rich in just preserving and keeping it myself.
Well, so now tell me, you know, you talk about your coaching services, and obviously most of our listeners know what a coach is or what she does, but would you describe coaching in general and maybe some of the tools that you work with when it comes to partner trauma and partner recovery?
Sure. So coaching is sitting down with a person and having active listening, hearing where they're really at in a non-judgmental, non-shaming way, allowing them to start understanding what their emotions are and where they may be coming from. And all of that gets unlocked through powerful, open-ended questioning. And what I've seen with people is that when they're not aware that they're a multidimensional type person, you know, we're not just physical beings. We are holistic beings. We have a spirit. We have emotion. We have a mind, a body. And they are all connected. And so what I see with a lot of people is that if they've never really tended to their emotional well-being, then that can be a place of shock to really even acknowledge that there's that space that needs to be tended to. And so one of the greatest things, and this is going to sound really crazy, my husband says, you know, he swears that I like it sometimes when people cry, but what I see is they're getting to that deeper emotion. And oftentimes it's painful situations that bring us to a place of need. And they question, but they can also bring about treasure for us, and that's the treasures in the trauma that we find. So when I work with partners, I usually start with a trauma scale that Kevin Skinner put out to help me understand what level of trauma they're dealing with. I also do a needs and values assessment to help them know what they need out of the relationship. And from there, we work on boundaries. But one of my greatest passions is helping people improve their relationship with themselves.
And so what tool would you give somebody to be able to understand themselves better?
Well, one of the tools that I use is Dr. Kristen Neff has an organization called selfcompassion.org. And I know that Brené Brown has referred to her work a lot. I love the site. It's got so many useful research articles and tools. So out of those research studies, she's built something called, it's an assessment for self-compassion. So I start there with clients, and I have them take the test, and it measures really essentially how kind you are to yourself. And so I build off of that tool And one of the ways I build off of it is I start by asking clients, what do you say to yourself when you make a mistake? Do you call yourself an idiot? Do you say you're stupid? Do you say, I should have done this, I should have done that, I can't believe it? What does that sound like? And oftentimes, you know, people that you would think are very confident will have some very, they have shaming talk inside their head that goes on all day. And I'll even have them take those words and imagine if you said that once a day this whole year, how many times did you shame yourself this year? And that's just 1 year of your life. And so we have to work to get out of those patterns and create positivity inside of ourselves. And I do believe, you know, I'm a Christian and I believe that I draw a lot of that positive affirmation from the Lord, who he says I am. And at the same time, not working against him by shaming and hating myself all day long. We can't love our neighbor as ourselves if we don't love ourselves. And so I'll say to people, imagine someone in society who is vulnerable. You see them in the grocery store and they have their caretaker with them. Now imagine that they drop them and that caretaker starts saying those words that you say to yourself when you make a mistake. You know, what would your response be? And most people say, I would probably report them, except we allow ourselves to do that to us all day long. And so it's just starting to be mindful that there might be a track in your head. Sometimes we have parts of our story play out in our mind without words, but it's very negative. And so becoming mindful of what's actually playing in your head is one of the very first steps to changing that.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that wholeheartedly. And, you know, they say there are 60,000 thoughts a day that we have, and most of them are the same thoughts, just exactly because of what you were referencing. They're negative or limiting beliefs that continue to race around in your mind, and you wouldn't talk to your daughter like that. You wouldn't talk to your best friend like that. Why do that to yourself?
Yeah.
Now, I know that you're a self-esteem and self-worth coach. I mean, that's really apparent in how you work and what you promote. Why do you believe that self-worth is so important?
Well, I can tell you in my own story, and I haven't shared my whole story on your show, Carol, and I'll just go off on a slight small tangent. I am a pretty passive person, and my personality is steady and compliant, and I married a person who has a highly dominant personality. He's a Marine. He had his own trauma and really ran our house like the military. And so because I went into that relationship, not codependent, I wouldn't say that that was in my makeup with my husband, but what I would say is that I was hard on myself. And so it was really hard for me to convince myself that I was worth it. That, and I didn't even know that track was playing and that I was kind of working against myself. But because I wasn't kind to myself, I would shame, you know, my body image, had that negative talk. And we just don't realize how many times, even when we're getting dressed in the morning, the clothes don't fit right. And so I couldn't convince myself to go into the arena of duking it out with boundaries. And, you know, ultimately I wanted an emotionally connected relationship with my husband, and I do want that, and we now have that because he's entered into recovery and he does the hard work, and he's a completely different man now. But at the time that I needed to have firm, hard boundaries because he wasn't willing to enter recovery yet, it took me 17 years to decide that I was going to do that. And I believe that with a lot of women, it has to start with thinking they're worth it, thinking they have enough value to know that it's worth standing up and being treated in a kind, respectful, loving way.
And so, obviously, your own story is about recognizing and having an awareness that you need to be kinder and gentler to yourself. And let's face it, Julie, when partner betrayal occurs, you do a lot of comparisons. You wonder what the average partner says, what did I do wrong? How am I? How am I contributing to this problem? And you know, from an APSAT standpoint, we know people may have had marital difficulties, but it is not marital difficulties or low self-worth that causes sex addiction at all. They're two very separate things. And so what do you think the average partner believes or thinks when they first discover that their husband has looked at pornography or has had an affair? What do you think they really feel about themselves?
I know that for me, my own view went from bad to worse. And I think one thing that really scares me for partners, and I know I've walked this road, is body dysmorphia. You know, really, and I think some of it is wanting to desperately control the situation and have it feel tangibly safe, but really it can go from bad to worse when the focus is really that we're not enough, that we haven't done enough, that we will never be enough. And I've found so much healing in embracing a dialectical method of mindfulness, becoming aware. Mindfulness is really just becoming aware of what those thoughts are, slowing down, and then finding where do I need to fully embrace and accept because I can't change it, and where do I need to step into a space of change with courage and learn to take a step towards changing the things that I can. And I think that you can start in such a crushed place as a partner that it really is nothing short of a miracle to be able to stand up again and say, I will fight this battle, because even if it doesn't change my immediate circumstances, it's changing who I am on the inside just for stepping into that arena.
And, you know, I get that we are a society where boys are taught, I was just talking to a partner about this today, you know, boys are taught that it's okay to talk about women in the locker room and objectify them and comment on their body size. And then women today, and even young girls, they see so many advertisements and commercials and videos that say the best way to be attractive is to sexualize yourself. And so obviously, partner betrayal and sex addiction is all about that betrayal. And it's all about objectification. And it makes so much sense that a woman would immediately wonder why she wasn't good enough. And she would go probably first to her appearance and then to what she can offer up to the world. And, you know, I've talked with so many partners that are mothers that wonder, did I give too much time to my kids? Did I leave him out? Was I not a good enough wife? And you and I both know that people are busy, and if there's marital difficulties, it's up to both of them to talk about it. But sex addiction is not about feeling left out because your wife is being a good mother. Sex addiction is about something that hijacks the brain and doesn't let go until that person has the tools to combat it. Now, again, as a coach, you give partners tools to reverse some of that thinking. And I'm a coach too, and we were brought up to believe that limiting beliefs are at the core of keeping somebody down, not actualizing potential. And so I was going to ask you, have you done, you know, I know that you do data collection, and I'm wondering what that is and how that has helped you to understand the women that you work with.
Yeah, I all of my clients, I have a Google form that I have them fill out that automates everything into a document so I can see percentages. And it's really amazing to me that, you know, when you do values, the number one value is trust. So when you do an assessment of self-compassion, the number, when someone is not in a betrayal trauma situation, typically you'll see them around the number of 2 to 3. You want to see it at a 5. That's the ultimate goal. So I'll recheck in 6 months to see how people are doing. But partners, when they come in, their level of self-compassion is so low. It's usually about. And I was just reading a study that talked about 207 undergraduate students who did this. They participated in a study where they were told to randomly think of thoughts that were more compassionate and kind. And at the end of the study, they were really surprised to see that all of them had lower levels of negative emotion. And what's really hard is that us as partners, the safety of our life has been removed. That's that first part of that multidimensional trauma model that we're safety seeking. And it's really hard when this exposes how we may already have thought of ourselves a little bit. Now, not everyone. I don't like stereotype and say all partners are one thing because I think that's unfair. But I think it can expose a low self-image. And the great thing is that when it does, there's things you can do about that. What we focus on does expand. And I love the proverb, it's not that a person of righteousness doesn't fall, it's that they rise 7 times. And so we will keep getting knocked down by life, but when we get back up, each time we do, we get stronger. And so when you start focusing on those limited beliefs and understanding how you can rebuttal them, it can unlock some of those patterns, and it can start to heal the way that you think.
Well, I love that too, and you have a lot of scripture that supports self-work and self-growth, don't you?
Yeah, I really try to make that central to helping me to know that God is in control, that He's loving and He has kind intentions towards me, and that Him and my husband's addiction are not the same. They are two separate things. And He loves us enough that He gives us choices. And people make bad choices sometimes. And they're not, that doesn't reflect on God's love for me.
So let's get up close and personal. You know, I know that you believe, and as do I, that we have to know how to change our self-talk. And we have to stop that inner critic, if you will, that gremlin that reminds us that we aren't good enough when in essence we are. And we have to make decisions to rebuild trust in our own intuition and in our own self-worth. Now, you believe that boundaries and self-worth tie in so closely together. How do you help a partner to strengthen her boundaries?
Well, I've done so much research recently on this, Carol. I can tell you that it's one of my biggest passions, because especially for a partner who has a spouse who's not going to enter into recovery, she needs to know how to navigate those messy waters. And it's not easy. And I think sometimes we forget that everyone's situation is different. So what I do with partners when I'm working on boundaries is, number one, I do a safety assessment. Because what I don't want to do is arm a woman with boundaries, have her go into a situation where she wasn't safe to begin with. It's kind of like cooking a chicken. You're not going to turn the heat up if the chicken's almost done. Now, if she's not safe, let's get her safe, and then we can look at the next step. So safety is number one, and that means, is she emotionally safe? Is she physically safe? What is her financial situation? Are there power control issues there? And so what I do after that is I like to look at personality and know, what are the personalities we're dealing with? What is his personality like? What is hers like? And then it's assessment. Do we have a high dominant? Is somebody staying compliant? What are their junk topology, Enneagram? What is all that? How does that factor in? Because if you as the betrayed partner are very steady and compliant, and you're dealing with someone on the other end who's very dominant, chances are it's going to be very, very hard to be heard. You may only feel that you have 10% respect in that situation. You may feel that your voice is heard 5% of the time. And so if you're not even heard, how do you?
Well, and you mentioned Enneagram, and tell our audience about the Enneagram, because you made it sound like the Enneagram gives you information about somebody that may alter how you proceed with a client.
Yeah, so, you know, with the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs and the Jung topology, they're all different types of personality tests. In any of those, I see value. Human beings innately have value. So whether you have that dominant personality or you're steady and compliant, wherever you fall on the Enneagram, whether it be a helper or an inspector, a leader, a peacemaker, they all have their place, because we as people need to come together and work as a team. We balance one another out. If we were all the same, we would be in one direction, and there wouldn't be enough of a balance. You know, if we're all peacemakers, we might not be getting anything done. But if we're all highly driven and really dominant, we could kill each other before we even get to step one. You know, it's that balance in anything. Like balance, and at the same time, for a woman who's trying to convey boundaries, if she has a more compliant helper personality, that in and of itself is going to be a challenge. It's not impossible, but it's an area that I'm going to work on with.
Okay. And so, obviously, when I think about boundaries and self-worth and how they might tie together, I would think there'd be almost a delicate balancing act of helping somebody to find their voice, to learn assertiveness, to assess their safety, because you don't want to teach somebody assertiveness if they're in a physically abusive relationship, because they're going to get hurt. And so I'm going to ask you, do you have a list of boundaries that women typically need to feel safe?
I do. When I started working on some disclosure documents, and one thing that I do in that situation is have everyone sign a behavior contract. But especially for the partners that might not be safe in the beginning, like you said, you have to be so careful in those power control situations. So I assess each situation as it comes, and I want her to tell me where she feels unsafe. because we would start there. It's about her finding her voice and knowing what that sounds like. And if I give her every solution, then she's never going to grow in her ability to know what she needs. So I like to start with the partner expressing to me, where does she feel unsafe, and how is that going to be translated into needing a boundary? And then we start building our boundaries. Another really good resource that I use is the Bunyan group that Dan Drake works for. I hope I said that right. They have some amazing resources on boundaries, and they have a section that explains what they are, how to convey them, and helps you to take your values and build boundaries around the values. So I use that a lot as well in helping partners build what they need to share with their spouse.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I do believe the boundaries can feel very overwhelming at the time of discovery because, of course, the brain is not really online. And that's where, again, a coach or a therapist, a clinician, can really help a partner come up with boundaries. And, you know, this is an APSATS radio show. And if people want to go to APSATS.org, they can find a clinician or a coach that can help them specifically with these things. But I also want to remind people that your website, www.newenglandcoachingservices.com, is a great way for people to get a hold of you. Do you give out your phone number?
Absolutely, yes. My number is 603-277-3462.
Okay, so as Julie indicated, the number is 603-277-3462. And you know, one of the beliefs that I have about your coaching and coaching in general is that we really help people, but especially partners, to get in touch with and begin to trust their ability to make decisions again. And a lot of times that means they have to look at the reality of a decision, but they also have to trust their gut, trust their intuition. So what do you do to rebuild trust in your own ability to make decisions?
That's a great question, Carol. I think that trust starts with knowing who's safe and leaning into those people and knowing that you can trust yourself. I have a lot of partners who are just such amazing women, and they're so reliable, and I just value them so much. And it's amazing to me that they don't trust themselves either, even though they know they're going to, you know, 9 times out of 10, make the right decision. And so I think it's trusting God, it's trusting yourself, it's trusting the safe people around you. And as far as building trust with your spouse, I like to use something that Naked Truth Project uses called a trust bank. And you do an exercise where you understand what things that person is going to be doing to help build trust back in your life. Because love is freely given, but trust is earned. And so it's really it's up to them to do the work to earn your trust back.
Absolutely. And, you know, intuition is something that all women possess. I really believe it was given to women for birthing purposes, for one. You know, they have to make quick decisions based on their intuition to keep their own children safe. And then obviously when that betrayal has occurred and their trust has been shattered, it can feel like they can't trust themselves. And you and I also know that in APSATS, we know that after discovery, a woman no longer trusts her husband, trusts the universe, the world, God, and then, of course, herself. So I always tell women that their gut really is something they can count on, and they may even need to write a paragraph from God every day, having God tell them something that they need to trust. And I believe intuition is God-based. So when they're writing to themselves from God, they're actually accessing their own intuition. And it really can be helpful in strengthening that relationship that got fractured because of the betrayal.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good. I love the tips that you give, Carol. I just want to thank you for all the work that you do. I really have valued listening to your podcast and your book. It's been a treasure for me to find. It helped me a lot in my healing journey. And I think journaling is a great exercise. I love the Penny Baker journaling, just kind of freely writing without thinking about punctuation or spelling, and just getting out what you need to say so that you can find that truth on the paper. And really, your intuition does come out in that.
And I think
it's a God-given gift. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, you obviously have your finger on the pulse of the people in the world, not even just the United States, but the world, in terms of their coaching abilities, their clinical abilities. Would you tell our listening audience about the virtual conference that you're putting together?
Yes. We are doing a conference in October, and it's the New England Betrayal Trauma Conference, Reconstructing Faith Side by Side. We have six main speakers, and then we have three others who will join us for breakout sessions. Actually, I think our total right now is 12. So Barbara Steffen, who was the original founder of ABSAT and the president, Lori Hall, Catherine Etherington, Karen Rellos, Kristen Carey, and Lachelle Burkett are all our speakers. And then we have Donna Dixon, Judy Alvarado, and Connie Spiegel, and Kathy Reynolds, and myself all doing breakout sessions as well. So this is not just one person or organization. The hope was to get many organizations coming together and speaking to women on how they can heal, how their faith can heal. Faith is a big part of what can really take a huge hit when you feel you've been faithful, you've done the things that your spiritual advisors have told you to do. You believed, you prayed, you fasted, and yet you end up in a place that you can't control. And I think it's so important to come alongside and support women and not shame them. When they start executing, you know, and putting boundaries in place, it can look like they're giving up when in fact they're actually fighting. And so we as the church need to come alongside them and help them to know, how can we help you be safe again? How can we support you? Where can we help you stand to fight for your marriage, to fight to call people to something better than addiction? And to know that there's no formula. We can't make a person get help and get recovery. And so if they choose not to do that, it leaves that woman with some really hard decisions. Sometimes I say in my group, you know, partners, sometimes they have two stinky decisions or three horrible decisions, and none of them feel good, and none of them are really advantageous for them. It's just which is the lesser of the evil for that woman.
Very well said. So as we begin to end the show, is there anything else you want to tell our listening audience about you or about self-talk or about self-worth?
I just want to encourage women. I've been there, you know, 17 years, and my husband was very controlling. And it was very, very hard. I didn't feel I had a voice, and he would be the geographic shore to try to run out, to outrun his own addiction. You know, and at our lowest place, we were homeless. And I just remember God giving me the verse that he would be with me, that he wouldn't leave me, that he wouldn't forsake me. And knowing that you're not alone, knowing that there's support, is so huge to healing. If you're debating stepping into a support group, take that chance and let other women come around you and help you heal. And just know that you're not alone.
And, you know, it was almost as if you were listening to the beginning of the show, because I was saying that although some women choose not to tell anybody about the secret, what we know is that finding safe people to confide in and to seek support from, it absolutely increases healing. And then that incredible transformation occurs that we were talking about today, and people want to give back. And you are certainly an example of a woman who has been through a lot, grown from it, and you're giving back. So thank you so much, Julie. Really appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Carol.
All right. Make it a good week.
All right, take care.
And she really is an amazing person. She works really hard to find resources for partners. Just remember, you're never alone. And that's what this show is all about, reminding you of your strength, the resources that are out there for you, and the support that you can get. Don't deny yourself. And remember, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.
For more information, go to appsats.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.